Good evening and welcome to our show. You're listening to KZSU Stanford 90.1 on the FM dial. Our program is Open Air. My name is Michael Gray and I'm here tonight with Sherry Huber. Welcome, Sherry.
Thank you.
And our topic tonight is relationships. You can hear us in the Bay Area here at 90.1 on the FM dial. Or if you're further away, you can hear us over the internet at kzsulive.stanford.edu. As I mentioned before, our topic tonight is relationships, and we have our first caller on the line. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Barbara, tonight we're talking about relationships, and I understand you've been looking at this topic and have something to explore with Sherry.
Thank you. Hi, Sherry.
Hi.
What comes to my mind is actually been a difficulty with relationships with the opposite sex, and a history of that. And when I was thinking about the topic, how there is certainly two parts of myself I'm aware of in this kind of struggle, and the part that feels safe by not getting involved, and then the part that feels wanting and lonely and knowing the positive things of being involved with someone closely.
So one part of you wants a relationship,
right,
sees the positive aspects of that, and another part of you really doesn't want that, considers, in fact, a relationship to be a struggle.
And scary and threatening, and it's like a difficulty being able to put myself in the position of being judged, rejected, just a lot of negative, abandoned, just a lot of negative things, which is, you know, a long history of having those feelings. And it's like what I realize is I have not broken or disidentified with those feelings enough to move my life along in a way that I think would make me happy.
Because, of course, the logical thing would be to have the part of you who feels positively about relationship, who wants a relationship, likes a relationship, enjoys a relationship, it would seem reasonable to let that part of you have the relationship.
Right.
But it sounds like instead the part of you who struggles with relationship has the relationship.
It's dominated, absolutely.
And so when you consider that, where do you get to with that?
Well, what I got to is that I have been under a spell for a long time, from early fears and early experiences, I'm living them today.
So you're not actually in the relationship that you're currently in, if at whatever point you are currently in a relationship. You're not actually having that relationship. You're kind of having all of the relationships from your past.
No, I'm not in a relationship now.
No, but if you were to get into one, you wouldn't actually be in this relationship. You'd be in all the relationships that didn't work in the past.
Yeah, and even in the smallest ways that I've had some dating or some encounters, that those feelings, which are very strong, will come up.
Well, may I make a suggestion?
Please.
Let me ask you a question first. Do you tend to go into a relationship with a hope that it's going to work out this time?
I go into it with fear of rejection.
So you kind of go into it with an assumption that it's not going to work.
Right.
And
it will be because of me.
And of course, what we realize in those situations is we can make anything happen that we expect to have happen.
And we do.
Yeah.
That's what I've learned.
Yeah. So it might be interesting to approach relationship from the perspective of I'm going to have a relationship simply to watch how I sabotage having a relationship. Okay, so the focus then is not on, I would really like a relationship to work, but I know it's not going to.
Right.
Because you've really caught on to the fact that this is a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
You're setting it up and you're getting exactly what you're expecting. So, of course, you know, you always have the choice of not doing that anymore, but this part of you who wants to have a relationship still wants that. Now, I'm going to push for that, right? I think she ought to get a chance to have a relationship, right?
Yes,
she needs.
That sounds so nice.
Yeah, she needs to have a relationship.
Yes.
And as she's having the relationship, to keep an eye on all of the ways that this other part of you sabotages, because that part of you doesn't want to have a relationship that works. Yeah.
Right.
So to change the focus from I'm in this, knowing how it's going to work, expecting it's going to work out the way it has in the past, I'm going to get to prove to myself once again that I can't have a successful relationship. Instead of focusing on that and believing all those stories, all that those voices that we hear in our heads, to go into it with, I'm going to see how this happens.
Is there also a suggestion, because even now that we're talking about it, I'm feeling the fear rising up in me to even be in that situation.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm a firm proponent of the approach of having something like fear and finding out about that fear.
Okay.
Instead of, I'm feeling fear, I shouldn't be. Fear is there. This is proof that there's something wrong. Oh, no. It's going to go the same way it's gone again. Now, because we have a finite period of time, and I don't know when I'll get to talk with you again, we can just kind of, as they say, cut to the chase.
Sure.
All that's happening with fear is a group of sensations in your body to which a story has been attached.
Uh-huh.
Okay? So those sensations arise, the story comes into play, which it sounds like is something along the lines of, oh no, here it is again, I'm going to be rejected, just like I have been in the past, this is never going to work, blah, 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 blah. So to go into the situation again with the intention to see how that fear is controlling your life. So that you go into it, you see the fear start, you watch the voices, you feel the sensations in your body, you begin to realize, now, wait a minute, these are sensations in my body, and these are voices in my head, and this is a very terrifying story, but it's not real. There's nothing actually going on.
That's great.
Yeah. And
it's a terrifying story.
Yeah. Oh, it's a terrifying story. But you realize now that it's a story. Mm-hmm. And so as you listen to it, as you practice just breathing, which is, of course, is what we do in awareness practice. You just breathe.
Right.
You watch the story. You breathe. You watch the story. You know, you could go to the most terrifying movie that you've ever seen or ever heard of. And the first time you watch it, it's going to be terrifying. And even though you know it's a movie,
right?
They're not going to come off the screen. They're not going to get you. Nothing's going to happen. It's still terrifying. But if you watch that movie 100 times.
That's an excellent example.
Yeah, you watch it 100 times, and what you're practicing is keeping your breathing calm, not going into stories, not getting caught up in how terrifying. Pretty soon you can sit there and be perfectly ready. You could probably nod off in the most terrifying movie in the world.
Great. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Bye.
Let us know, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Barbara.
Thanks.
The Surfrider Foundation is a nonprofit environmental organization dedicated to the protection and enhancement of the world's waves and beaches through conservation, activism, education, and research. Surfrider is committed to preserving the diversity and ecological integrity of the coastal environment, maintaining low-impact, free, and open access to beaches for everyone, and promoting environmental education and grassroots activism in the protection of our oceans. For more information, contact the Surfrider National Office at 122 South El Camino Real, number 67, in San Clemente, California, 92672, or call them at 714-492-8170. This public service announcement brought to you by the Surfrider Foundation and KZSU Stanford.
Okay, we're back. You're listening to KZSU Stanford. Our show is Open Air, and I'm here with Sherry Huber. Tonight we're talking about relationships, and our next caller is on the line. I understand you have a concern or an issue that you're exploring with relationships.
Yeah, this is Jeff. I'm in Cupertino right now.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Sherry.
What?
I was listening to the first caller, and I heard a couple of things she said that sounded similar to me.
Uh-huh. You know, one of the things that we realize very quickly when we start talking about something like relationship is that we're all way more alike than we're different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. It's funny, this little background, little story is, not too long ago, just several months ago this year, I joined one of those online matching services.
Uh-huh.
You know, you can put up a profile and hopefully people respond to them.
Mm-hmm.
And
hopefully,
I did that.
Hopefully the right people respond to them.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that, and I kept revising it and changing it and got it all nice. And very few people responded to it, and I was kind of worried. But then after I got it all nice and I felt really good about what I wrote about myself, and I was real satisfied with it, and I was actually kind of glad that people weren't contacting me.
Uh-huh. Now, why was that?
Well, when I really looked at it, I really wasn't up to starting a relationship.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of weird because I went through all this trouble and actually paid money, you know, to join the service, thinking, you know, I want to meet people,
mm-hmm.
You know, meet someone special.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it's just something I didn't. So it's something I've noticed about myself is that I've put a lot of energy into trying to make myself available or seem interesting or attractive to people that are attractive to me. But then I really, deep down inside, don't really, truly want to have a relationship at this time.
Uh-huh.
So when I cut on to that, it was kind of an eye-opener.
Yeah. A book that I'm intimately familiar with called Be the Person You Want to Find. It sounds like what you went through sort of goes along with that title. That what you had an opportunity to do in that process was get really clear, kind of in your relationship with yourself.
Uh-huh.
Being able to be clear about who you are and what you offer and what you want and all of those kinds of things brought a kind of a satisfaction that perhaps having somebody else respond to you wouldn't necessarily enhance.
Right.
Yeah.
For years, you know, agonizing over, you know, everybody else is in a relationship or coupled up or getting married except for me, and
mm-hmm.
woe is me and what's wrong with me. And it's like, I remember a couple of years ago, my younger sister got engaged, and I was jealous, and I was actually very ashamed of myself because here was my younger sister getting married, and I wasn't.
Uh-huh. You're the older brother. You should have been snatched up long ago.
Yeah, like, what's wrong with me? You know, all my sisters are getting married off. And it turns out they actually didn't end up getting married, but she just last week announced her current boyfriend that they're going to be getting married next spring. And my reaction's totally different this time.
Uh-huh.
It's like I'm, you know, it's like good for them. It doesn't mean anything about me.
Uh-huh. And so what has shifted in you? Do you know? You just feel more settled in yourself or more comfortable with your life, kind of more content with who you are?
Yeah. I do have to sort of admit to myself that there are things about a relationship, quote unquote, that I kind of look at pessimistically. Like I kind of see the glass half empty.
Uh-huh.
I kind of see the dissatisfying parts of relationships, and I don't see what would be sort of the thrill or the high.
Mm-hmm. So I see a similarity with the first caller. The uh-huh. the person who's looking at relationship has kind of is jaded, too strong a word? Kind of a little cynical attitude about relationships and their potential?
Yeah, I think that's hitting it right on the head.
Uh-huh. So once again, we're kind of looking at different aspects of ourselves, right? As with uh-huh. the previous caller. So there's a part of you who was much more dominant in your life, who really wanted a relationship and felt left out and kind of bad about himself that he didn't have one. And the person who is kind of dominant in your life now is somebody who sees relationship more as possibly something that's not going to work or that's going to make life less pleasant than more pleasant.
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I want to head into it if I know I'm going to get more benefit out of it than I am going to get, I don't know, disappointment
mm-hmm.
out of it.
Mm-hmm. And it is there a romantic,
that's kinda weird.
A romantic part of you? Oh, sounds very human. Mm-hmm. Is there kind of a romantic part of you who feels like probably when this happens is when the right person comes along and kind of sweeps you off your feet and you're in the relationship almost in spite of yourself?
Yeah, I mean, that's like something that's kind of the top, you know, kind of in the background.
Yeah, rather than sort of something that's pursued almost like a job where you're interviewing people and, you know, finding the person with the right qualifications. That's not the, you know, that's not the, your eyes meet across a crowded room and suddenly everything turns upside down and you're just head over heels and that's sort of thing.
I'm kind of like 30% of the first and 70% of the second.
Uh-huh.
I'm kind of methodical about that. I guess I kind of like wait, you know, for that lightning bolt to strike.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know. I think I'm kind of like scanning, just kind of keeping my eyes open.
And in the meantime, it sounds like you're pretty okay with your life as it is.
Yeah. Well, definitely better than it was before.
Mm-hmm.
I actually just came back from dinner with a coworker of mine and a friend she brought along. Sort of like to introduce us, and it was fine. It was, you know, it was great. But I didn't make anything more out of it.
Uh-huh.
You know, because her friend is single also.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I don't know. Yeah, like you said, just kind of keep going, move to the next one.
Uh-huh. Yeah, see what life presents next.
Yeah, I guess it's just the situation I'm in right now.
Mm-hmm. And again, I would say the part of you who is present in your life. Be interesting, because at any point that person could come back front and center who really wants a relationship, really wants to be like everybody else, coupled up, paired off. So it'd be interesting to see how it unfolds.
Yeah, I definitely want the companionship, mm-hmm. I guess. But sort of like what would you call it? I guess sort of the tensions that come up in relationships, conflict sometimes. That's what I think that's the fear.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
I don't want to have anything to do. I've seen enough of that.
Uh-huh.
You know,
although, now you're obviously kind of a thoughty, introspective sort of a fellow. So perhaps that sort of thing might actually turn out to be kind of the interesting challenge that adds a little spark and fire to the mix. So you have a chance to see yourself in the mirror of relationship, which can be kind of enlightening.
Yeah. Well, I guess the one way I would do it, it could happen next week or next month or whatever next year.
Yeah.
So I guess just have to be there when it happens. And
exactly. Be there and be present for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, great.
All right.
Thank you, Jeff.
Okay, thanks.
Talk to you again.
Bye.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Open Air. My name is Michael Gray. We're here with Sherry Huber, and we're talking about relationships. You're listening to KZSU Stanford at 90.1. If you're not here in the Bay Area, you can catch us over the internet at kzsulive.stanford.edu. Does your child have trouble rhyming? Or maybe he has a problem connecting letters to their sounds? These may be signs of a learning disability, but don't worry. There's nothing wrong with your child. He just processes words and information differently than others. And with early detection and the right help, most kids with a learning disability go on to do well in school. To find out what you can do to help your child, the Coordinated Campaign for Learning Disabilities urges you to call 1-888-478-MIND. That's 1-888-478-MIND. You're back. You're listening to Open Air. My name is Michael Gray. We've been talking about relationships tonight, and we have our next caller on the line. Erin, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Wonderful.
Hi, Erin.
Hi.
How are you this day?
Great. How are you all?
Very, very well.
Great.
How are your relationships?
Well, they're interesting. The one question I was calling in about tonight was my relationship with people that I don't know so well. So I was thinking about this today because I had an interaction, one which I've had before, basically with people I don't know too well, but it triggers this intense rage that I don't know where it comes from. So today's experience was I was dealing with some tax forms with a city employee, and things were going fine, and then I thought the customer service turned really poor. And so I basically went over this cliff, like I was fine, and then all of a sudden, you know, this rage hit when I thought some injustice had been done to me.
Uh-huh.
And then I take a step back, and 5 or 10 minutes later, you know, I think, oh, that was silly. That was nothing. But another time I've experienced this is I used to live in Boston, and my driving became super aggressive there. And every now and then somebody would cut me off, and I would just go off the deep end.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And, you know, I look back, and I say, that's very irrational.
Yes.
And I know it, and I can kind of see it coming, but it also blindsides me sometimes.
Yes. Well, you know, those emotions, they can often be irrational.
Yeah.
It seems to be the nature of the beast. So what you've noticed, it sounds like, is that this primarily happens with people that you actually don't know.
Right.
So, uh-huh. So it's one of those impersonal relationships that...
Yep. It's, you know, I don't know the other drivers. I don't know this city employee who was trying to help me.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like I would almost never have this reaction with somebody I did know. Like, I'd be too embarrassed
yes.
to act this way.
Uh-huh. So the anonymity factor plays into it.
Yeah.
And the other piece of it is injustice.
Yes.
It's unfair. This isn't right.
Right. Like, I don't deserve this poor service.
Uh-huh. I don't deserve to have people cut me off in traffic.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And is there an element of powerlessness in it?
Definitely.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's this tax system, and I can't change it, and it doesn't fit my needs.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, I'm driving along fine, and I have a right to the space in front of me in my car, but somebody takes it away and endangers me.
Uh-huh. And you're really helpless in this situation. You're powerless to do anything about it.
Yep.
So we could call this reaction possibly an impotent rage.
Yep, yep.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And it seems as if it's not there. I mean, you don't experience yourself as a really angry person or a rageful person.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, boom, it's there.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. When these certain components are present.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
When I feel like I have been wronged somehow.
Yeah. And that you are really powerless. I keep coming back to that. That you're helpless in this situation. You're kind of defenseless.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, you know, if I'm driving defensively and I'm in traffic and I think, oh, you know, I'm just really going to enjoy this. I have all the time in the world. I'm not late for anything. And somebody cuts me off, I couldn't care less. You know,
uh-huh.
I just back off and I say, that's fine. You know, I'll give you more space.
Mm-hmm.
You must have somewhere to go.
Uh-huh.
But in certain mindsets, I say, how dare you, you know,
yeah.
cut me off.
Okay. Now, in the one that you just described, you're not going anywhere. You're not in a hurry. Everything is fine. You're very relaxed.
Yeah.
And so what's the state? Can you describe this, the other state?
I would say somewhat calm, tranquil. But also, I think that when you mentioned powerlessness, I think in those situations, I am controlling my behavior. So
uh-huh.
I have the power to say, I'm going to let it be okay that you cut me off. Or
right. You're in charge.
Yeah.
Now, in these other situations, when you're going along, when you're there with the customer service person, do you feel kind of energy building in you, kind of an anxiety or a irritation or a restlessness or that sort of thing?
When things aren't going well,
uh-huh.
Yeah.
But you're controlling yourself?
Yep.
Yeah? Yeah? Uh-huh. Okay, this isn't going the way I want it to, but that's okay. I'm a grown-up. I'm calm.
Right.
I'm rational. I can take it. I can take it.
Momentarily.
I can take it, and then all of a sudden, boom.
Right.
I can't take it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And at that moment, do you have a sense of exactly how much pressure has been building?
It seems like a ton.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then I hadn't really noticed,
mm-hmm.
but then it gets released, and I'm like, how did that happen?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And, of course, it's one thing when it's another driver in a car or it's somebody on the other end of the telephone that you'll never see.
Mm-hmm.
But then when we have this kind of experience in closer relationships,
yeah.
where, in fact, you do have to see the person again,
right.
where you wind up feeling quite exposed and embarrassed,
mm-hmm.
And the whole thing has been witnessed.
Right.
Yeah, that's a rugged moment, isn't it?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's with people I don't know so well, is this my first impression?
Right.
You know, I get worried about that.
Uh-huh. Well, and isn't part of the worry just plain old being so out of control?
Yeah.
Yeah, that I doubt that fits your self-image.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I feel, you know, and I see my friends sometimes act this way.
Oof.
And I say, you know, a better approach really is to not do what you're doing
yeah.
when I know that I myself get in those
yeah.
situations.
Yeah. And this other approach that I'm describing will have you look better.
Right.
Yeah. You won't have to be humiliated over this for the next weeks or months or the rest of your life.
And I think it facilitates getting done whatever I
yes.
need to get done.
Yes. However, you know, what we're suggesting in this is what is very, very popular in our culture, which is called stuffing your emotions. Because
uh-huh.
the most important thing for us, of course, is to be rational adults.
Right.
That's the key. We don't want to be like those spontaneous emotional children. Now, of course, we want to be spontaneous, but we want to be spontaneous in a very controlled sort of a way.
And positive and good.
Yes,
yeah.
all of those kinds of things. So I'm wondering if it might be more helpful instead of trying to exert more control, because what you've realized is it doesn't work.
Yeah.
I mean, it sort of works. It works right up until it doesn't work.
Right.
So it might actually be more helpful to get in touch with, to allow yourself to be aware of that energy building, that anxiety or irritation, that, you know, I've had 3 cups of coffee, and that mm-hmm. sort of feeling as it's coming on.
Yeah.
So that you are aware ahead of time, and you can actually begin to do things that could alleviate some of that stress.
Right.
In other words, if nothing else, you could be saying to yourself, I'm getting really irritable. This
yeah.
is being very stressful.
Right.
I'm being quite heroic not to be yelling at people. You could even, depending on the circumstances, say it out loud.
Yeah.
So you could say to the person on the other end of the phone, you know, I realize that you're working really hard to help me out here, and you're doing a great job, and this is taking so long, and I find myself getting incredibly impatient. And, of course, the person on the other end of the phone might just think, I have a case on my hands here.
Right.
However, it would be very therapeutic for you because you're acknowledging what's going on rather
yeah.
than just letting it build, trying not to look at it, pretending it's not there, and then snapping and turning into a crazy person.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think for me that's going to be the hard part because
mm-hmm.
sometimes I feel like, it was just fine a second ago, but now it's
yeah.
all gone
yeah.
crazy.
Yeah. And, you know, I think as you turn your attention to this, if you want to take this approach, as you turn your attention to it, you will see that you actually had a lot of information for a long time.
Right.
Because what we're doing is building to that, I can't take it. So what was actually going on the second before I can't take it is, I can take it.
Mm-hmm.
I know that it's going on. I know I'm getting really irritable and short-tempered, and I'm pacing and clenching my teeth, but it's okay. I can take it, and then I can't.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's It's admitting to ourselves ahead of time, I'm losing it, rather than it's unacceptable to lose it. And
right,
so I'll pretend that I'm not right up until I do.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it all gets turned against you, right? Because
yeah.
Look at you, for heaven's sake.
Exactly.
What a nutcase.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you got to do something. Get a grip.
Great.
Yeah. Well, this will be exciting to watch.
Yeah, definitely.
Uh-huh. Because there are a lot of annoying things in life. Have you noticed that?
I have.
Yeah, a lot of slow, incompetent people, except when they're cutting us off in traffic, and then they're very fast and
right.
Capable.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, so you'll have lots of opportunities to watch this.
Well, I'll try to take the bus a few more.
There you go. Thanks for talking with us this
sure.
evening.
Sure, thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow, we've had some wonderful callers tonight, huh?
Yeah, it's great.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Open Air on KZSU Stanford with Sherry Huber. Stay tuned after our show tonight. From 10 p.m. to midnight, we'll have David Buggs in your ear. Tonight, he's featuring a live in-studio interview and a performance by a local Bay Area musician, Vernon Hohenstein.
Hi, this is Crisco Jones, and as a plea bargain to my pending bicycle theft charges, I wanted to let you know that the Stanford University Department of Public Safety and KZSU remind you that bicycle safety laws apply on campus as well as in the surrounding communities. When riding on campus at night, you're required to have a white light in front and a red reflector in back. A flashing red light in back is even better. Helmets are a good idea for everyone, and are required for riders under 18. Use good common sense when parking and locking your bike. Don't lock to handicapped access ramps. Try to find a stationary object to attach your bike, such as the bike racks. The bike racks. The bike racks. The bike racks. The bike racks.
The Rutherford Institute is a civil liberties organization that defends persons whose constitutional and human rights have been violated. The Institute is a legal and educational team of aggressive attorneys and concerned citizens who work to protect the liberties guaranteed to every American by the Constitution. The Institute is a non-profit organization and legal services are provided without charge. If you believe your constitutional rights have been violated, give them a call at 1-804-976-3888. Or visit www.rutherford.org. Once again, that number is 804-976-3888 and www.rutherford.org with Rutherford spelled R-U-T-H-E-R-F-O-R-D.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Open Air. We've been talking about relationships. We're here with Sherry Huber, and we've had several great callers already. And we have another one on the air here.
Wonderful. Who
Ken.
Do we have?
Yeah, hi, Sherry.
Hi, Ken.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. And yourself?
I'm doing pretty good.
Good. What's going on in your relationships?
Boy, I don't know. I guess what I was thinking of kind of describes it is, for me, as I was, what came to mind was blind and confused.
that kind of characterizes the whole issue.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
Yeah. And I was thinking about your second caller who said that he, you know, was envious of people who got married. Of course, I've been married and divorced twice, so
uh-huh.
You know, I kind of
you're a little less envious.
Yeah, I wouldn't have been so bad to wait a little longer.
Uh-huh.
I noticed that in my relationships, I tend to be more extrovert, and I tend to go, be attracted to more introvert type
uh-huh.
people, quiet and reserved.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know, with my first wife, after, 12 years of marriage, I was with this, what I thought was this sweet, wonderful person, and we had some tough, rocky road period of time, and all of a sudden I woke up with a very angry person and, blaming me for all that was wrong in the life and some things I'd never heard of. And it was kind of like I thought, well, I don't know what's going on here. What's happening?
Uh-huh.
And
so you assume this sweet, quiet little person wasn't thinking.
Yeah, I thought they were happy.
Uh-huh.
You know, or at least satisfied or something. I'm
yeah.
not sure.
Yeah, well, she wasn't saying anything.
No.
Yeah.
No.
So how are you to know?
You know, and I'm the kind of person, I just go along doing the things that I do, and I guess I assume a lot.
Uh-huh.
And I guess my what I'm trying to process here, I guess I've kind of developed, you know, I wonder how, you know, you made a comment earlier on the radio that we're more alike than different.
Uh-huh.
And then I guess I was kind of thinking in some ways, well, maybe not we're more different, but there's things that are different about men and women. I guess I feel like I have these blind areas where
uh-huh.
I don't see things in the relationship that are going on. And so if I don't even know they're there, how do I find them?
Yes, right. Well, and have you looked at what it is about these quiet, sweet, retiring types that you're attracted to?
Yeah, I think there's an element of a rescuer in me.
Uh-huh.
Trying to, like, you know, I tend to usually be confident in most areas of my life and tend to be, you know, out there kind of doing things. And
mm-hmm.
it's like, I don't know, it's like, it's kind of like where the reserve person can, you know, show that other part of themselves, be less reserved.
So you enjoy taking reserved people and kind of bringing them out of themselves?
I guess I do, and that must be part of it. But I'll tell you about a weird thing that happened to me just the other day, and it brought to focus something that's happened before. So I assume because of this that maybe I'm really better with somebody who's more extroverted, more like I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in a dentist office the other day, and I was sitting there by myself for a few moments, and a nice lady walked in, and she sat down, and she just started talking to me like she'd knew me forever, and just going on, and I was tongue-tied. It was like me.
Uh-huh.
You know? And it was just like, I didn't know what to do.
Uh-huh. You found yourself being kind of retiring and quiet and introverted.
Yeah, playing the other role.
Uh-huh.
It was weird.
How was that for you?
You know, actually, I felt uncomfortable.
Yes, yes.
And that really surprised me because
yes.
I thought, you know, this would be like, we would just, you know, if that same energy was coming back, I'd be like that and it'd just be this huge energy thing going on. But it wasn't like that. It was all. It was like, you know, all of a sudden things came to mind like, you know, well, what is she doing?
Yeah, what does she want?
What does she want? Exactly.
And so, yes, so you find yourself kind of backpedaling.
I did.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was a real, you know, that's an experience I haven't had too many times.
Yeah, so when you're with the introverted type, then you get to have your big energy and be outgoing and kind of be in charge of the conversation, where we go, what we do, right? So you can be comfortable in that role.
I guess that must be it.
Yeah, it's familiar to you.
Yeah, it's familiar
yeah.
to me.
And yet, because you don't have any experience being on the other side until last week, then you don't really, you don't think in terms of, well, when this person is not talking to me, what are they doing in there? If they're not saying what's going on with them, does that mean there's nothing going on? Or are they just not saying what's going on?
Yeah, yeah.
And it doesn't occur to you, it's not natural to you to ask.
Exactly.
Right? Because people don't have to ask you.
So that would be an area to look, maybe?
Yeah.
Just to, okay, like, what's going on?
Yeah. Exactly.
Now, I guess I have it. It's got to be some big mysterious thing here. It's got to be more than that.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Can't be that easy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, but, you know, it's not that easy.
Yeah.
Because, first of all, you have to not be talking to have it occur to you that there's a silence.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, and for extroverted people, not talking, not, you know, just going on about whatever is not a natural kind of response to life,
yeah,
right?
Right, right.
Yeah, so that's kind of tricky to just stop. And that can be very uncomfortable not to be talking, not to be putting that big energy out there.
Yeah, so, I can kind of picture that.
Yeah,
That part of me seems to feel uncomfortable already.
Uh-huh, yeah. You know, so. And then when there is that silence, then you're going to remember to fill it by saying to the person with you, well, now, what's going on with you?
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
they might not know, or they might not respond right away. And then those of us with big energy are going to want to take over the conversation again because there's all this uncomfortable silence.
Right.
Yeah. So it might, yes, it's pretty simple, I think, kind of straightforward, but that doesn't mean it's going to be easy.
No, it doesn't. It sounds simple, but like you say, not easy.
Yeah, because those are a lot of traits, a lot of habits,
mm-hmm.
a lot of patterns in your behavior that you're going to have to bring a lot of conscious awareness to, and a lot of willingness to step into a world that is completely unfamiliar to you. So there's, you know, I bet if I said, well, Ken, how do you feel about da 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 da? I would hardly get to the end of the sentence, and you would know exactly how you felt about that, and you'd have a lot to say about it.
It could be very possible.
Uh-huh,
yeah.
But they're those quiet, introspective types. You know, they're thoughty. And it could take them a long time to come up with what they think and how they feel, to be courageous enough to put it out.
Uh-huh.
So it requires a lot of patience to create the environment that's going to allow somebody like that to be comfortable. And I think the thing that you said in this conversation that's important, for them to be comfortable, it might require you to be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So we can have sympathy for somebody who says, well, let's just go on. I mean, we seem to be doing fine. And then 12 years later, the boom has dropped.
Oh, boy. And like, the 2x4 against the head.
Yeah. Yeah, but you can sympathize with the person who said, well, you know, I mean, we could dig around in this, but seems fine. Everything seems fine. You know, the old, if it's not broken, don't fix it. You know, she's not saying anything. She's not complaining. She must be happy.
Yeah, yeah, there was a big assumption there.
Yeah, well, we do that.
Yeah.
We project from our own life experience, and unless we bring a lot of attention and awareness to it, we just assume that everybody is living in the same projected reality that we are inhabiting. And it's not true.
Yeah, so it would be just a place for me to kind of be conscious and be really present to.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I think it would be fun to go in a couple of directions. One, to be with the kinds of people, the kinds of personalities that you're sort of naturally drawn to, the quiet, introspective types, and to see if you can bring more quiet, more kind of a drawing out sort of approach to the conversation.
Uh-huh.
And also to put yourself in the position with the big energy, outgoing, extroverted types so that you can explore those parts of you who get kind of overwhelmed by being in the quieter role in the relationship.
Yeah, and I kind of, you know, learned from the observation of myself during that one situation. Oh, there goes the motorcycle. that one situation where, you know, where I felt uncomfortable might be a likely way that another person might react to me.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
That was an area that was kind of really, that was not there for me. I really hadn't seen it like that, but with such clarity before.
Yeah. There's a wonderful book. I don't know if it's still in print. It's called The Seeker and the Sought. I think that's it. The Dance of Intimacy, I think it's called. If I'll look it up.
Okay.
Next time we tune in together, I'll have it right. It's a little cartoon book, and it tells the story of the seeker and the sought. And I think you would definitely find yourself in it. I think you would find yourself as the seeker, which
is... So this is like a cast of characters here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, well, actually, it's narrowed down to two.
Oh,
that
okay.
In relationships, in just about every relationship, there's a seeker and a sought.
Mm-hmm.
And the the seeker is exactly the way you describe yourself, and the sought is exactly the way you described yourself in that interaction with the woman in the dentist's office.
Mm-hmm.
So might be worth looking into, and it does give a lot of tips about what it's like to be on the other side, on the receiving end.
Well, I'll have to look and see if I can find that.
That'd yeah.
Maybe point in some directions that I'd be helpful.
Yeah, yeah. And it sounds like you've got some good directions.
Yeah, it
and,
is.
And some fun things to explore.
Yeah, it really is, you know, mm-hmm. and it's a whole different outlook on things. So.
Yeah.
Gosh, there's some new possibilities in relationships.
Yes, a lot of relationships to explore.
Oh, boy.
There are worse things in life.
Huh?
There are worse things in life.
Yes, there are.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, thank you, Ken.
Well, thank you very much, Sherry.
I look forward to talking to you again.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. We've been talking about relationships, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Did you know that more people suffer from Parkinson's disease than multiple sclerosis, muscular dystrophy, and Lou Gehrig's disease combined? Did you know that Parkinson's disease affects not only the elderly, but even people in their 30s and 40s, and this figure is growing at an alarming rate? There is no cure, but there is hope. The American Parkinson's Disease Association works to ease the burden and find the cure through medical research, patient and family support, and education. If you or someone close to you has Parkinson's and needs help or information, please call the American Parkinson's Disease Association at 1-800-908-2732. That's 1-800-908-2732.
Hi there, my name is Michael Gray. You're listening to Open Air on KZSU Stanford 90.1 FM. If you're not local to the Bay Area here, you can catch us over the internet at kzsulive.stanford.edu. We've had some great callers so far, and we have another one on the line right now. Scott, welcome to the show.
Good to be here.
Great.
Good to have you, Scott.
Hey, Sherry.
How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Good.
What's going on in your relationship life?
Well, I'd like to talk a little bit about my relationship with my folks.
Great.
Or lack of relationship, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Haven't talked to them in a few years.
Mm.
And they're sort of getting up there in age.
Uh-huh.
And I have a lot of thoughts about my lack of relationship. And I feel there's a lot of conflict, a lot of voices going on inside my head about how it's, I should be talking to them and I should be feeling certain ways that I don't feel and I shouldn't feel other ways that I do feel. And it's complicated up in my head these days.
It sounds busy.
It's busy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And there's one voice that has been there for a long time that is always looking for somebody else to tell me that it's okay not to talk to my parents.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I guess that voice paid attention to that one commandment in the Ten Commandments. It feels like I'm doing something bad.
Mm-hmm.
And that's painful.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So that person wants somebody to sort of let him off the hook.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Because he certainly feels like, regardless of what they did or didn't do, a child should have a relationship with his or her parents. And it's very, very difficult for me to do that, and I'm resisting it,
mm-hmm.
and it's creating a lot of tension.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you this, Scott.
Please do.
Is there anybody inside of you, anybody living in that very busy, overpopulated head,
yes.
Who would be open to having a relationship with his parents? Anybody who would like to see what it would be like at this point in life or feels like it's worth taking a chance because it could be good or any of those kinds of things?
An excellent question, Sherry. I'm glad you asked.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Uh-huh.
And the reason why I don't is because there's a voice that is very, very loud is the you should voice. Mm-hmm. You should have a relationship.
Uh-huh.
And so any urgency isn't really the right word, but any desire, I guess, to have a relationship, that's all. It's all wrapped up in the you should have a relationship, another voice, the one that you just suggested, so much more quiet.
Yes.
And that one is a lot harder to hear, mm-hmm, amidst all of the other, mm-hmm, yelling and screaming.
Yeah, because for me, when somebody says should, that gets a rebellious teenager,
yes,
front and center in a big hurry. I should. Well, I'm not going to. And that's the end of that. So as you say, the part who might actually want this relationship doesn't get that much airtime. I mean, he's just kind of a little quiet voice over in the corner.
Absolutely.
And these other two are duking it out and screaming at the top of their lungs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't. It's not as if they're evil, psychotic people. Present day, there's really no reason not to have a relationship. The only reason is that there is a part of me that has certain expectations of what I want from them, and I know I'm not going to get it because they're not that kind of people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, very difficult to be in the same room with them because I want so much, and it's always painful and disappointing being around them.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, the decision that I made for not talking to them is just, it's so much easier that way.
Okay. Now, clearly, you're a person who has a sense that there are a lot of folks who live inside you having different attitudes and beliefs and opinions and interests, and they all call themselves Scott. But
I'd
they,
say that's a fair statement.
Yeah, they don't have much in common except the name.
Right.
Yeah. And so, so here is this part of you who wants his parents to be a way that they are not.
Yes.
Always wanted them to be how? How does he want them to be that they're not?
I think that I wanted them to be like the parents in the Brady Bunch.
Didn't we all?
Well, yeah.
Yeah. And they're not.
Right. As most parents aren't.
Yeah, as most parents aren't. Yeah. Okay. And I'm guessing you don't have children of your own.
I have a dog.
Okay, well, that's a step in the right direction.
Okay. Thanks, Sherry.
Yeah, okay, good.
It's all about baby stuff.
Because, that, in my experience, is the fastest way to take a giant step toward dealing with our issues with our parents, is just to have a child of our own.
Uh-huh.
And see how becoming a parent doesn't dramatically alter us in wonderful ways. In fact, if anything, it alters us in ways that become unfortunate. We become more stressed. We have less time. We more responsibilities, more pressures, more all of those kinds of things that make us less pleasant than more pleasant. So at any rate, there is this small boy who wants his parents to be kind of loving and open and fun and all of those types of things.
Right.
They never have been, and it doesn't look like they're going to have a great transformation and become that way.
Probably
so
not.
So here's my question.
Sure.
Rather than waiting for them to become something that we can guess they're not going to become, so that they can meet the needs of this part of you who remains a child,
yes.
Right? How about if you met those needs?
Well, don't think for a second, Sherry, that hasn't occurred to me.
Uh-huh.
Because it has.
Okay. Very good.
Thanks.
And what have you done with that occurrence?
Well, oh, not a lot. This is as far as I've got. I know that they are the way they are.
Yes.
And that's not going to change.
That is not going to change.
And I know
it
that.
It could, but the odds are very, very small.
It's doubtful.
Yeah.
So, and even if it did, it's sort of orthogonal. It's beside the point, really. Because I know that all of this is, it's all in my own head. And the other thing that I'm becoming aware of is, like I said, I have this set of expectations about the way I want them to be. Now, they aren't like that, and so I've decided, okay, it's just too difficult to deal with them because I have these expectations and they never meet them and stuff, so I'm just not going to deal with them, and then I'll deal with these other people.
Right, but the thing about it is that doesn't meet the expectations.
Well, I was about to say, I know that there's a problem there because I still have expectations.
Exactly. So you're not they're not taking care of this child.
Right.
And you're not taking care of this child.
Right.
Now, here's the point that I want to make.
Okay.
If you can't take care of this child, if you don't want to take care of him, if you're unwilling to do what needs to be done to take care of him, and you can feel his emotions, and you know his story, and you know the pain of having these unmet expectations, all of the disappointments that he's experienced, you know those feelings intimately,
yeah.
And yet you won't do what needs to be done to take care of him, why would your parents be willing to do what you're not willing to do?
Ouch. Because my parents are supposed to love me more than I love me, Sherry. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding about that. But, I mean, I'm sort of kidding, actually. I mean, I think that's... And sort of not, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I, you know, it's funny. That actually is the piece of it that I think transcends my relationship with my parents and informs my relationship with everybody.
Yes.
That piece of they're supposed to love me more than I'm supposed to love me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, Scott...
Yes,
here's the bad news.
What?
Right in the middle of this amazing conversation with you, I'm getting a signal that we have run out of time.
Oh, my God.
Can we make an agreement to talk the next time we're on the air?
Yeah.
Good. And we'll work this into the conversation no matter what the topic of the show is.
Sure, you're the best.
All right. Thank you, Scott.
I'll talk to you later.
All right. Good night.
Bye now.
Wow, what a wonderful show.
Yes.
You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. My name is Michael Gray. You're listening to KZSU Stanford at 90.1 on the FM dial. You can also pick us up over the internet at kzsulive.stanford.edu. A lot of effort went into tonight's show, and I'd like to thank a number of people. First of all, Sherry, thanks for joining us tonight. It's a thrill to have you here.
My pleasure, as always.
I'd like to thank our callers for sharing their experiences with us tonight. And our listening audience, I'm so thrilled that you're able to join us tonight, both locally here in the Bay Area and over the internet as well. I'd like to thank David Bug for the airtime tonight. Chuan Mei for engineering our show was a huge help. And all the folks at KZSU who have helped me to get this show on the air. Thank you all. Future topics of our show will include Money for Nothing, Can't Get No Satisfaction, and I'm Too Sexy. Do these ring a bell for you? I hope so. If you want to contact me or you would like to be a caller on a future show, please email me. You can reach me at mgray, that's M as in Michael, gray, G-R-A-Y, at kzsu.org. We'll be on the air again, and we'll keep you posted. Next up on KZSU is In Your Ear with host David Bug.